Culture. James Baldwin at 100. A mountainous legacy. Few American writers have seen their country more clearly than James Baldwin.
In the months after a young black man in Ferguson, Missouri was shot by a white policeman in 2014, galvanizing the Black Lives Matter movement, no prominent African-American writer was invoked more often on social media than James Baldwin. That was no surprise. Baldwin was an eloquent civil rights activist whom the FBI watched anxiously and who counted Martin Luther King Jr. and Malcolm X among his friends. Yet as Robert Reed Farr, a professor at New York University, jokes, James Baldwin never wrote a sentence of 140 characters, ever. Though Baldwin, who would have turned 100 on August 2nd, wrote elegantly direct sentences, his prose was subtle and often baroque, unlike the sort found on X. Venerating Baldwin for his activism risks overlooking what made him unique as a novelist and essayist. His fiction depicted African-American life with more honesty and complexity than any writer who preceded him. He influenced legions of writers, including Maya Angelou, Toni Morrison, and Ta-Nehisi Coates. The centenary of Baldwin's birth is being marked in America and Britain with festivals and books analysing his legacy. Colm Tobin, a celebrated Irish novelist, has written a book called On James Baldwin. Vintage, a publisher, has released new editions of three of Baldwin's best works. All this is testimony to Baldwin's status as one of the most important perspicacious writers of the past century. Baldwin was born in 1924 in Harlem to Emma Burdis Jones, who, like many African Americans in the early 20th century, had left the rural South for the industrial North. His stepfather was a labourer and Baptist minister. Baldwin was reading literature by the age of 10 and preaching by 14. Also around that age, as he put it, he fell in love with a male school friend without the faintest notion of what to do about it. He didn't go to university, but found his way into writing. He published his first essay, a review of Maxim Gorky's stories, in the spring of 1947, when he was living a bohemian life in Greenwich Village. Like many young writers, he was trying to work out who he was and what he had to say. In his case, that meant wrestling with his sexuality and with what it meant to be black in America. "I don't like people who like me because I'm a Negro," he wrote in the introduction to his first book of essays. "Neither do I like people who find in the same accident grounds for contempt." To him, well-meaning liberal condescension and racist hate were two sides of the same coin. Both saw African Americans not as individuals, endowed with the same constellations of virtues and flaws as anyone else, but as objects of pity and scorn, respectively. One of Baldwin's earliest reviews heaped scorn on Uncle Tom's Cabin for precisely that reason. Baldwin felt protest novels, meaning novels written with an explicit political purpose, fail as art because of their rejection of life, the human being, the denial of his beauty, dread, power, in their insistence that it is his categorization alone which is real and which cannot be transcended. Despite his power as an essayist, his heart lay in fiction. Baldwin's career as a novelist didn't bear real fruit until he left America for Paris in 1948. As he put it later in his life, one reason he left is because nothing worse could happen to me there than had already happened here. He would travel between the two countries for the rest of his life, calling himself a commuter rather than an expatriate. Abroad, he felt freer to delve into his inner world, an essential requirement for any novelist. But he couldn't abandon his family or the struggle for civil rights back home. The church and sexuality would form the cause of his two earliest and best novels. In Go Tell It on the Mountain, 1953, the protagonist, John Grimes, struggles with his faith, but also experiences a quasi-religious epiphany and displays tremendous promise as a preacher, all of which were true of Baldwin himself. The author recognised that the church provides comfort, structure and meaning to many, even as he also understood how religion could provide cover for sin. The book ends with John insisting, "I was saved. I was there." Giovanni's Room, published 3 years later in 1956, concerns a young white American named David and his tempestuous affair with Giovanni, an Italian bartender he meets at a Parisian gay bar. The inspiration for Giovanni was Lucien Happersberger, a Swiss boy, just 17, whom Baldwin met at a gay bar in Paris. Baldwin called him the love of my life. Through David, who was engaged to the long-suffering Hella, Baldwin criticises the strictures of what he called the paralytically infantile ideal of American masculinity. The book was daring for its time. Baldwin's publishers at Knopf told him it will ruin your career and declined to publish it. Fortunately, the Dial Press was not quite so spineless, and the book was released to largely favourable reviews. Aside from a superb film version of If Beale Street Could Talk in 2018, Baldwin's novels have rarely been adapted for the screen, and they're less often taught in schools than they were in the late 20th century. The ecclesiastical concerns of Go Tell It on the Mountain are more and more remote to an increasingly secular country, and the sexuality in Giovanni's Room and Another Country too raw for an era of curriculum battles. Despite his ambitions as a novelist, Baldwin found the most fame, and certainly the most lasting influence, as an essayist. Though his essays were often discursive in subject, sentence by sentence, they have a pithiness and power well suited to social media. One oft-reposted line comes from a piece he wrote for the New York Times in 1962, as the civil rights movement was gathering steam, about the writer's social role. Not everything that is faced can be changed, but nothing can be changed until it is faced. His work is an appeal to an individual's conscience, a theme also appropriate for the social media age, in which displaying the correct moral stance supersedes the grinding political work of building coalitions across ideological lines. Baldwin was unblinking, but deeply patriotic, and resistant to sectarianism or contempt. "I love America more than any other country in the world," Baldwin wrote early in his career. "And exactly for this reason, I insist on the right to criticise her perpetually."